Yeah.
Open the House Committee on Human Services. Open the House Committee on Human Services today, April 15th, 2009. Colleagues, we're going to be carrying over to Friday, 2051, 3353, 2868, 2205, 2413. Is that it? And we will open 2666. Keeley.
This bill creates a work group in the Department of Human Services for the purpose of studying and reporting to the Legislative Assembly findings and recommendations relating to the risks, education practices, and funding models for identifying and treating perinatal mental health disorders. There is a recommended amendment. The Dash 1 amendment changes the term perinatal mental health disorders to maternal mental health disorders and defines the term for the purposes of the act, because there were some questions within the committee about whether or not the medical use of the term would be accurate.
Okay. Any discussions about this, colleagues?
Thank you. Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move to adopt the House bill, the amendments, Dash 1 amendments, dated April 6, 2009, into House Bill 2666.
Representative Olson moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2666, dated April 16, 2009. Any discussion? Any questions? Any objections? All right. The Dash 1 amendments are adopted.
And Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2666 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded.
Representative Olson moves House Bill 2666 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation, and that the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded. Any discussion? All right. Zach, would you call the roll, please?
Representative Van Orden.
Aye.
Representative Mauer.
Aye.
Representative Huffman.
Aye.
Representative Freeman.
Aye.
Representative Dibrow.
Aye.
Representative Callum.
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Boone.
Aye.
Chair
Zomay. Aye. Having received the required majority, House Bill 2666 passes and will be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And thank you all for coming and being involved in this. And thanks for your vote this morning. This is a real
big deal.
It is a big deal. Yes, thanks. And I think I would like to carry this on the floor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Real.
So thanks.
Yeah. Vice Chair Olson, she's just going to turn it into some woman thing. leaving men out.
So thanks for the work that you have done on this bill, and it will go to the floor, and from there we'll go to the Senate. So I expect you to be active over there. So thanks again. Close the work session on House Bill 2666 and open up a work session on House Bill 2905.
House Bill 2905 establishes the Community Poverty Solutions Initiative Fund with monies appropriated to the Housing and Community Services Department for distribution to the Community Action Agency Network. The Dash 1 amendment, which is recommended for adoption, renames the fund the Poverty Solutions Fund and removes the appropriation.
Okay. Representative Boone, do you want to talk more about this? I think this was your bill.
The community action teams, or agencies, we call ours a team in our area, they pick up a lot of slack in the communities as far as they know who the people are who need the services. They do deliver in some cases separately from the county, and that makes in some counties, especially the rural counties, depend on them to administer these. I think they're mostly federal programs for like weatherization, and all kinds of assistance things. It may not mean much to some people, you know, when you hear the amounts, you get $200 or $300. But it's a big deal for people to get through the winter. In some of the cases of in my district, especially during the storms, a lot of the people who we didn't even know existed came out of the woods where they'd been living, and were, you know, especially with this snow, it was just stunning to me. We don't usually hear from these people, even when they have a problem, a medical problem or anything. A lot of them are vets, and they're not connected to some of the veteran services. And so this is a, and they're very, very poor. And this is something I know that we would like to have $5 million, but there isn't that. We're not the feds, and we can't print more money downstairs. I thought we could. But this is something we need to keep this account alive, build this account in future better years so that we can be able to keep providing for these people. And I don't, does anybody have any other questions?
I would point out, and you should have received the fiscal analysis, colleagues, and if you'll notice on the bill, there is a blank general fund appropriation. So we're sending it on, assuming that there probably won't be any monies. There may not be any monies this legislative session to put into this, but we want to make sure that it be on the books so that when we are a little more flush, that we'll be able to put into this program.
And just in case, we have somebody down there has an epiphany, if you're listening, this would be a great place to put your epiphany money.
Yes. Representative Van Orman, did you have a question?
Well, I don't have a question, but I would like to support what Representative Boone says, because this is a group that takes care of the people that agencies can't take care of, and it takes care of the desperate need.
Good. Thank you for the work on this, Representative Boone. And I think that there is a Dash 1 amendment. We haven't adopted yet, have we?
No.
And it just is sort of a housekeeping.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendment of House Bill 2905, dated April 9th, 2009.
Representative Boone moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 2905. Dated April 9th, 2009. Any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, the Dash 1 is adopted. Representative Boone.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2905 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Boone moves House Bill 2905 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Any discussion? Seeing none, back to call the roll, please.
Representative Cowan.
Aye.
Representative Dimbra.
Aye.
Representative Freeman.
Aye.
Representative Huffman.
Aye.
Representative Mallon.
Aye.
Representative Van Orman.
Aye.
Vice Chair Boone.
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson.
Aye.
Chair Clement.
Aye. Having received the required majority, House Bill 2905, as amended, passes. So now it goes to Ways and Means, right?
Yes.
And then it will come to the floor, and then you would carry
I'd love to carry
more
about
it.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Okay, I will close the work session on House Bill 2905. Great. So now we will move down to 2887, and I will open up a public hearing on House Bill 2887.
This bill requires that medical assistance be provided to individuals 19 and older who qualify for Social Security disability but do not have medical benefits because they're within the Medicare waiting period.
Is Representative Espel all coming to present this?
I thought that he was.
Okay. John, in the meantime, do you want to come up and talk to us about this bill?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, John Mullen with the Oregon Law Center. Pleased to be here today to talk about House Bill 2887. people who qualify for Social Security disability have a 2-year waiting period for Medicare. I've attached some documentation to my testimony that talks about a situation, a man named Raymond, who wound up in the waiting period dying waiting for Medicare. This is not something that's uncommon. It has happened many times around the country, and disability rights organizations throughout the country talk about this. Historically, it had to do with the idea that if you got Social Security disability, you may find yourself back in the workforce. So if you were below 65, you had a way to prove that you were really going to be have a disability for a long period of time before being eligible for Medicare. I did have the thought about submitting a conceptual amendment to House Bill 2009, which I did. Representative Maurer and Representative Dembro were here until late last night as we took a look at how those health care bills will have a different path, different history, and it may be something that will come up again in House Bill 2116, which is the new health care bill. Basically, as we're looking at coverage for individuals and expansion populations, there are a number of potential possibilities for various populations to fall through the cracks, and this is certainly one of those. I would point out that the average SSDI payment is about $1,064 a month. What that means is that that translates to about 118% of the federal poverty level. So if we look at what is going to happen now with House Bill 2116 as the expansion populations are put over in that bill, if we look at expanding OHP standard and opening it up again, it's for people at 100% of the federal poverty level or below. So in other words, this is still going to be problematic for this population. I know the fiscal for House Bill 2887 is pretty substantial. I suggested an amendment to bring it down to at or below 200% of the federal poverty level. And that would take care of the majority of people that are in dire circumstances. I would also point out that there is discussion at the national level, which is also part of my supporting documentation, about changing this, and I do believe it is a federal responsibility to do so. However, just like we're talking about a number of things about health care this session, we can't rely on what the federal government may or may not do. But basically, the fix that's in the bill at the federal level would make you have to demonstrate that you are, in fact, suffering from a life-threatening illness to be eligible for Medicare, which I don't think is a very good, complete solution for the people that are really suffering during that waiting period but may not have a life-threatening experience. So, in conclusion, I just would say that, of course, we all recognize that this is a very, very difficult session. I would point out, though, that even though we have a very difficult session and revenue is a concern, we are looking at ways in which we can expand services, healthcare services, to a variety of people. For example, kids aging out of foster care is another example of another covered population that's being looked at. So I would like to ask the committee to give this consideration. It could be something, if you so desire, to send down to Ways and Means, and it could be something that could be cobbled together as far as the final decisions that get made about who gets covered in the expansion population and who does not.
Thank you, John. Any questions of John?
I have one, and I didn't miss it, and you covered it, but what started this 2-year period? Why is it 2 years? Seems like that's a long time.
Madam Chair, Representative Boone, basically the whole idea behind this was the idea that people that receive disability benefits may wind up back in the workforce, and certainly that can happen for some people. It can happen for people on SSI, for that matter, as well. But the vast majority of people don't wind up back in the workforce, and it's particularly difficult for people that are experiencing very, very severe disabilities, and as is illustrated in the attached, the case of Raymond, who actually wound up dying waiting for Medicare. And so the theory of it is, again, to be clear about it, is that some people might indeed wind up back in the workforce.
Any further questions, Representative Olson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just follow up, Representative Boone. What's the percentage then of the folks that do return back to work, back in the workforce?
Madam Chair, Representative Olson, I don't have that information offhand. I'm not entirely sure that Social Security has statistics on that. I've looked for that particular information, but I'd be happy to do some further research.
Representative Cowan.
Thank you. I need to clarify one thing I heard. You said there was an exception if people had a terminal illness before in that two-year waiting period, or at least I thought that's what I had heard. And then as I'm reading Raymond's story, it seems like he would have qualified under that condition. So.
Madam Chair, Representative Cowan, that is under consideration for a federal bill. It's as part of the attached documentation. It's called Ending the Medicare Waiting Period Act of 2009, H.R. 700.
Perhaps I need to turn the page over. Thank you very much.
Any further questions? Representative Boone.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick one. More of a comment. I think this is the question I get from constituents when they're having a problem. They want to know why it takes so long, you know, because, and this is the other thing, is all the stuff that we have ramped up electronically for speed and better effectively disseminated services, et cetera. They said, why can't they do that? I can file my taxes online. Why can't I file this form and, you know, move things quickly? And I've never known what the answer was. I just said it's the federal government. There's lots of them. Mm-hmm. I don't play lightly on it, but I think this is one of my most common constituent frustrations, is how long it takes to get approved for this.
Madam Chair, Representative Boone, that's a related issue about the disability determination that has a state component as well as a federal component. I think that what I would just say is that there have, of course, been a number of articles about the waiting period for people getting disability benefits and the cumbersome process. I would just say that of the bills that you have here today, that we'll hear 3065 in a moment, and this particular bill and House Bill 2051 that was carried over for the General Assistance Program, we have some very, very uneven policies for the way we deal with people with disabilities, and it is really a very, very difficult thing for the public to understand why it's the case. I think that if anybody, for example, were to see the situation presented by Raymond, you know, the average person on the street, if we pull them in off the street, is this a person that should get health care coverage? And I think most people would say absolutely yes. This is a situation that was very, very difficult, and there are many of those throughout the country. So again, I would just say that these policies, and they've been put together at different times, different periods, it's then up to the state and local entities to try to make the best sense out of these things for the public. And oftentimes the discussion isn't satisfactory because it's not within your power to change the way it works at the federal and state level. And hopefully, though, there'll be enough light shined on this as health care reform goes on that this will be taken care of at the national level. But, of course, we can't predict that it will.
Thank you, John. I know that Representative Esquivel is here, and he wants to speak on this. Bill, why don't you just stay there in case any other questions come up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Sal Esquivel, Representative District 6. The tragedy here is the fact that we do not react. And let me give you an example. I was diagnosed with diabetes from Agent Orange, and I get a disability from that. And so I was put on the fast track, what they call the Tiger Team. Well, I'd forgotten about it, but 18 months later, I received that settlement. I get a check for $3,600 for the 18 months retroactive. That's the problem with the government. We have these people that are out here that have no place from A to B on health care or coverage. So they're ending up either in trouble, like this one individual did, passed away, or end up in our emergency room. And we wonder why our health costs skyrocket. They have no alternative. They have no place to go. We drop them off here in the middle of no man's land and say, good luck. Wait for the government to take care of you. Folks, that's a tragedy. If it's one person that we save, what is the cost of that one life or more? The other hidden cost here is how much does it cost us as individuals to have these people in our emergency room, because that's where they end up. So I think it behooves us, until the federal government, which it may not ever get their act together, but somebody's got to take care of these people, and they are Oregonians. So who do we look to?
Thank you, Representative. Thank you for bringing this bill to our committee. Any questions of Representative Esquivel?
Representative Dimbro. Thank you, Madam Chair. And actually, this is probably a question more for John, just in terms of the process. So the person to become eligible for this benefit would still have had to go through the whole process, which we agree is overly cumbersome at the state level, right, to qualify for, or to demonstrate their qualification for SSDI. Is that right? So a person who would immediately come down with whatever condition qualifies them, still we're looking at a lengthy waiting period for that person, though we're trying to shrink that through changes and efficiencies in the processes. Is that right?
Madam Chair, Representative Dimbro, that's an excellent point. In fact, a person can be really waiting for health care coverage for much longer than 2 years because of the time that it takes to qualify for disability benefits can be lengthy as well.
Madam Chair, I'd like to respond to that a little bit. Representative Dimbro, a lot of these people that have come to my attention were on the Oregon Health Plan before they got their disability, Social Security disability. But as soon as they received that disability, bam, they're off the Oregon Health Plan. That's when they go into this twilight zone between that and getting the federal benefit, and that's the period we're really talking about, is from when they're thrown off the bus until they land someplace.
Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Chair Tomei. Are they thrown off the health plan because they receive disability or because their income changes?
Madam Chair, Representative Van Orman, this individual received, I think, $1,100 a month, Social Security disability, was unable to work, became ineligible for the Oregon Health Plan, but they had no insurance coverage, and for $1,100 a month to carry on a household, well, we can all just figure that one out real quick.
So it was the
income threshold.
Okay, thank you.
And we have people from DHS who are coming here to testify also this morning if we have any questions there. Any further questions?
Madam Chair, I found this really interesting, this piece, John, that you handed me. And I guess I just a really quick question of you from Senator Bingaman and Congressman Green. Do you know, should this pass, how quickly this is going to be moved forward in identifying the specific diseases that would apply toward this, that they can move?
Madam Chair, Representative Olson, that's an excellent question. Federal rulemaking process can also take a period of time, as we know, and again, advocacy organizations will be trying to get as many people in that tent as possible. So I expect it'll be quite an interesting discussion. It may take months.
Thank you.
See no further questions. Thank you so much for bringing this bill to us, and thank you, John, for coming to testify. Now we'll hear from, Jim Edge and Deanna Hotwig. Thank you for coming today.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Tomei, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Jim Edge. I'm DHS Assistant Director with the Division of Medical Assistance Programs. And with me today is Deanna Hartwig from our Seniors and Peoples with Disabilities Division. And Deanna can help me if there's some technical questions about the disability category that we're talking about. House Bill 2887 would give the Oregon Health Plan benefits to individuals who, as we've already heard, who are in that waiting period, that federal waiting period, waiting for their Social Security disability insurance. It would establish a new eligibility category in the Oregon Health Plan. Currently, individuals who have disabilities, adults who have disabilities, are eligible for the Oregon Health Plan if they're below the federal poverty level, as we've already heard, but not if they're above that level. Some individuals who become disabled are above that limit, and they're unable to afford or obtain health insurance for for their condition. This bill would provide medical assistance for those people during that waiting period of 2 years or longer. Actually, it can be 29 months. The department supports the purpose of this bill, the intention of this bill. We feel it's a good thing to provide this benefit to these people who have this need. We do acknowledge, though, that there is a significant cost to the bill that's not in the governor's recommended budget. Our estimate is that it would be about an $88 million cost during the 09-11 biennium and about a $227 million cost during the 11-13 biennium, based on a projected caseload increase of about 8,000 new clients. We have just a couple of concerns with the bill that I might mention. One of them is the bill has an implementation date of January 2010. Generally, with a bill like this, which creates a new eligibility category in the Oregon Health Plan, and will require us to get a waiver amendment, to negotiate a waiver amendment with the federal government, and that's a lengthy process. We would like to see language in the bill which would state something like the bill would go into effect on such and such a date if there is federal approval at that time, if it's been negotiated at that time. Otherwise, it's possible that the program might have to be implemented without federal matching funds, with general funds only, if we haven't yet acquired the waiver that we need from the federal government. The other issue that we wanted to raise with the bill is the fact that it currently has no upper income limit at all on the bill. I noticed as I walked in that there was a proposed -1 amendment in the back of the room that would establish an upper income limit. But currently, the bill as written has no upper income limit, and that would probably be problematic as we try to negotiate it with the federal government if there's an eligibility category being established for Medicaid which has no upper income limit. But in concept, we support the bill. We feel it has a good purpose. We like the fact that we're thinking about these disabled people and the fact that they need these services.
So, Jim, am I correct in assuming or understanding that you said that if the -1 amendment were adopted and there was a means testing, then it might be possible to get federal matching funds?
Madam Chair, I just briefly saw that -1 amendment. Uh-huh. As I walked in the room this morning, I saw that it established an upper income limit, it appears, of 200% of the federal
right.
poverty level. Yes, that would establish an upper income limit and give us a negotiating position with the federal government that I think would put us in good standing and probably make a waiver approval possible with the federal government.
So if we were to attach the -1 amendment and that were to go to your department, I'm not sure how it could be stated, but that if we got the federal income limit or federal funds, then it would give us some idea of what the general fund amount would be?
Madam Chair, yes. With the Dash 1 amendment, we would recalculate the fiscal on this bill, and it likely would be less than what our current calculation of a fiscal is.
And right now we're looking at lots of $88 million during 2009-11, $227 million. So it wouldn't get down to zero. There would still be general fund money that would be going toward this.
Madam Chair, yes, that's right.
Okay.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative.
Thank you. Jim, do you know if this is any part of the expansion conversation that's being had that is part of 2009, and which is now going to be broken into two and to 2116? I mean, this population certainly seems like it would fit into that expansion conversation.
Madam Chair, Representative Maurer, no, I have not heard that conversation. I've just seen this as a standalone bill, but I think it's certainly a possibility that, as with some other bills, it could be rolled into House Bill 2009.
Madam Chair,
yes.
My suggestion is that a conversation be had with Representative Kotek, who is kind of pushing the expansion piece. And I don't know how this would fit into it or whether it would be contemplated, but clearly there's a path to I think, address this population, which is probably is deserving or, you know, is something that we need to do.
Right. Thank you, Representative. Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Chair Tomei. In terms of the cost, my presumption, based on what you've said, is that this would be in addition to the health plan, as opposed to adding costs to the health plan and limiting the amount of people who might be eligible for the health plan. Am I clear?
Madam Chair, Representative Van Orman, yes, that's right. This will be a new eligibility category with some new costs to the health plan.
So that the money then would be in addition to the health plan. The client and the money would be new. We wouldn't be taking out of existing health plan dollars for this population.
Madam Chair, Representative Van Orman, yes, that's true.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions? Okay, thank you very much for coming today, helping us out on this. I wish Representative Maurer hadn't left.
Staff was out there. He may have had some information coming.
So, Michael, you're Representative Dimbro. You're on the Health Committee also.
Yes, that's right.
So do you think that it would be appropriate for us to pass the Dash 1 amendment, and then we could have a work session and we could see what the amount of money might be if we were able to get federal match?
Yes, I think that makes a lot of sense. I'm not sure how the 200% level fits into what's being talked about, but you know, I think that having that be part of that conversation, I think, makes a lot of sense.
Okay, so I think what I'd like to do, we're not scheduled for a work session on this today, so I think what I would like to do is schedule a work session so we can attach the Dash 1 amendment, and then we can ask for a fiscal and see where we go with that, and then perhaps send it on to Ways and Means. So is there anyone else here who would like to speak on this? All right, with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on the House Bill 2887 and open up a public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 3065.
This bill allows the Department of Human Services to provide non-cash benefits to individuals receiving assistance under the Oregon Supplemental Income Plan. And Representative Olson, I think.
Great.
Madam Chair, if we could have Deanna Hartwig come up with
yes, of course.
She'll kind of fill in some gaps here for me. Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Andy Olson. I'm state representative out of the Albany area. And Representative Boone has been so kind as to jump on board with me
Great.
With this bill as well. But House Bill 3065 proposes a change to the Department of Human Services authority in the administration of the Oregon Supplemental Income Program, which is known as OSIP, allowing the program to be operated more efficiently while offering more substantial benefits for Oregon seniors and people with disabilities. It's truly a win-win situation, and it's a rare occasion during normal economic times, and even more rare in light of the economics climate that we're able to gain like we are here in this bill. OSIP includes the supplemental income payments, known as SIP, and the special needs payments, ORS 411.704 and 706 requires Department of Human Services to ensure or issue both types of payments, SIP and special needs. The SIP provides small cash payments to certain individuals who qualify for the Federal Supplemental Security Income Program. Currently, both people receive $1.70 per month or $20.40 annually. Individuals who are blind get an additional monthly payment of $25.
Representative, I've got to stop you there. Those are correct numbers?
Yes.
$1.70 a month. There you go.
Thank you.
Yeah, as we get a little deeper into this, you'll kind of understand the reasoning for wanting to do the shift here a little bit for DHS, because it really does create this to be a lot more efficient program. As a result, and then you get a chance also to see how we save money as well through this process.
Great, thank you.
Okay, it's estimated that each check costs Department of Human Services roughly $4 to print, mail, and reconcile. Approximately 200,000 SIP checks are issued biannually with a cost of $1.1 million general fund. The direct benefit to clients during 2007-09 biennium was just over $2 million. It should be noted that over 40,000 of these checks still have not been cashed. House Bill 3065 allows for administrative savings to Department of Human Services. Additionally, DAS, Department of Administrative Services, may also see administrative savings since they will not be mailing and handling as many checks. The total amount of savings cannot be defined until program changes are established by rule. House Bill 3065 would give Department of Human Services the authority to end the inefficiency of sending out thousands of the $1.70 checks, using these resources more strategically to help seniors and people with disabilities. And suggested payments include, on the second page, there, Medicare prescription copay coverage for very low-income seniors, transportation services not covered by Medicaid, and emergency assistance. And I know there's been some discussion as well, Madam Chair, with you and I, with where Vice Chair Boone was interested in, too, with the general assistance issue. House Bill 3065 creates efficiency in governmental processes while offering substantial benefits to clients, and this bill does not decrease funding for the program. You should probably listen to Deanna here before.
Please proceed before we ask questions.
Chair Tomei, members of the committee, I'm Deanna Hartwig. I'm the administrator of the Office of Federal Resource and Financial Eligibility, Seniors and People with Disabilities, Department of Human Services. We have run the OSIP program for over 30 years, and its current iteration of, yes, $1.70 per month for people who receive the Supplemental Security Income benefit has been in place probably for about 25 years. This bill gives us an opportunity to really look at what that program accomplished. We are actually doing phone surveys of about 250 recipients of OSIP. We are talking to individuals who are blind, physically disabled, developmentally disabled, aged, and people with mental health conditions who qualify for SSI, to ask them questions about the $1.70. What does it really do for you? If there were other kinds of programs available, would those make more sense to you? So we hope to have those results tabulated relatively soon. We've also worked with stakeholders and advocates on this program to talk about ways to take a fairly substantial amount of money, about $2 million, and turn it into services that are of more value. We have a number of individuals who receive only SSI who have to pay their Medicare Part D premiums. This would give us an opportunity to help those individuals with those payments. They run an average of $30 a month right now, and though these individuals are probably using their personal spending to pay those copays. In terms of some of the other opportunities, a lot of our individuals who are on waivered services do not have ways to get around the community other than their medical transportation and perhaps some non-medical transportation to help them with shopping. This would be an opportunity to help some of them with more social recreational activities and become more involved in their community, so we're looking forward to that opportunity as well. We know some individuals hit some hard times, maybe with heating bills that they just can't pay, so our emergency assistance would allow individuals to ask for occasional help when they're having difficulty paying for food and their other living expenses, and we could use some of this SIP money to help them in those circumstances. The other thing it does is allow us to further some of the department's efforts in transformation, to take a good hard look at what are we doing, why are we doing it, do we need to continue doing it, can we do it differently. And this OSIP program, I think, is a wonderful example of looking at ways to deliver a good program and cut administrative costs. Until we actually figure out the program rules and operations, we're not sure exactly the total savings. We know we're going to have hard costs with less printing of checks and the postage to mail them. So we're really looking forward to an opportunity to deliver better service to the most low-income individuals that we serve in SPD.
Madam Chair, yes. I think probably that might fill even a few more little gaps in here from what you've heard from Deanna as well as from myself. Now, if we could also move forward, maybe having John Mullins come up and share a little bit, because he helped as well with structuring this. I mean, he can fill in some more gaps if he's here. John?
Madam Chair?
Yes,
Representative. While John's coming
yes.
in. Thank you. I think I should point out on the record that I haven't had a single constituent call and thank me for their dollar a month that they get. So I think that's important to point out. That,
thank you, Representative Huffman. Always glad to hear from you.
Could I add just one thing? I forgot to mention, I think this is pretty important to go to your point. By changing the $1.70, it will allow these individuals to get a dollar more in food stamps. So they really only lose the 70 cents. Thank you, that Representative Huffman. That reminded me of that point.
See, Madam Chair, I knew there was a point.
Thank you.
I just had to open the door for Deanna.
I appreciate it.
Thank you, Deanna.
Wow.
Representative.
Madam Chair, we're sort of chuckling and should be, I guess, in a sad sort of way. But to me, the critical line here that hasn't really been focused on is that there are 40,000 SIP checks still that haven't been cashed.
Nice.
I mean, there's a whole lot of ways to put almost $80,000 to work.
Yeah. Good. Okay, John.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, John Mullen with the Oregon Law Center. I have submitted some testimony, and I'd like to talk about this in a little bit of a context for a moment. We were invited, the Oregon Law Center and others, to participate in a work group with seniors and people with disabilities during the interim. We were pleased to have that opportunity. When we got together, we took a look at the statute, and we believed that a statutory change was necessary. SPD at the time was looking to go ahead with rule change. I wanted to see the statutory change happen so that we could have a little bit of a discussion about what's going on with these programs. I mentioned earlier in testimony on another bill about the uneven policy that we have in working with people with disabilities. I'm very pleased that had an opportunity to work with SPD and Representative Olson, because it is really indefensible to talk about spending a large amount of money to supplement at the rate of $1.70 a month. However, when you turn to people who are blind and you look at the fact that they're getting $25 a month, that's some real money for people in those situations. And I think it really sort of calls to question about what we do with people with disabilities and what are we trying to attempt to do. Other states do supplement SSI. SSI payments are about 75% of the federal poverty level. So when you think about people with long-term disabilities living at that rate, and having an inability to pay rent and do a number of other things, A number of states have an agreement with the federal government to have the federal government add the supplemental, state supplemental, to the SSI checks. So there's not a matter of lost checks, that kind of thing. The federal government used to do that for free, but now charges the state to do that. But I think it just also just puts the whole thing into context that, again, people that have long-term disabilities have difficulty in managing with very small amounts of money. And the idea that I would like to come to, assuming that this bill passes, is we come back and we work with SPD, and I think they have a number of very good ideas. But in future years, you can expect that I'll be coming back and other advocates will be coming back to talk about in better times about what we can do about having a supplement that really works for people and also having special needs, emergency needs that are available for people. Again, you know, our goal, of course, is keeping people as independently as possible. And when they can live in the community, it saves taxpayer money if they don't wind up in the long-term care system or have in-home services. But in order to do that, we have to look at what's going to be manageable for that household, both in terms of regular cash assistance and for emergencies when they come up. So I will look forward to engaging with SPD in the rulemaking, assuming the committee passes the bill. And I just think that Representative Olson has done a really good job in identifying that this is an opportunity to save money, and I certainly agree on the bureaucratic side of things. We have an opportunity to save dollars, and that's very important in this session. But over the long haul, I hope we'll give a good look at to what we're trying to accomplish with people with disabilities. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Any questions of this panel?
When can we get this done?
So who discovered this? Who had this bright idea to bring this bill up?
Well, actually, it was Madam Chair. Thanks for the question. Because of what I wanted to do was take a moment to thank a few people for jumping in with and helping out with this. But Karen Mainzer approached me several months ago, and we had this discussion, and we started really, you know, just fleshing it out, and this is what you're seeing today. John has been very involved with it as well, and some of the discussion on the sidelines, and I appreciate his help. But Karen's been really instrumental in helping us with this, and then also as well as Deanna. So
that's great.
I mean, it's been kind of really a neat little team effort.
Yeah. Very good. That's wonderful. So is there any problem with passing? There are no amendments needed, right? So we could pass this today.
We think that this will impact payment.
We can carry the work session over till Friday, and I hope that we'll have it then, but we haven't received it.
Okay. All right. Any other further questions of this? I've got to move the children over there.
I'm sorry you have such a difficult time with half of your classroom.
I don't know what to do about that. We were just wondering.
It is so funny watching these two teams.
We were just wondering how we can find out other insane programs that we just year after year.
Well, we're going to look to Karen Mainzer to
there
find
we go.
Out more.
Thanks, <Answer, laughs> woman.
We really appreciate it. Thank you.
Madam Chair,
yes.
What we were talking about, and it's so frustrating to me, this reminds me of back in the 70s during the energy conservation measures. You know, we were all asked to make these energy conservation measures, and I had one of the, still do, have one of the most expensive electric companies in the state because they're still paying interest on the WHOOPS plants, but that's another story. But as we in good faith made these measures, we'd save, you know, energy different ways, stuff that we're talking about again these days, they would not lower our bills. They would either stay the same or they'd go up or they would shift that. Now they have that money, and rather than taking those savings and using them to further the conservation measures and maybe serve more people or help people who can't pay their bills. And so the problem, I think, is people probably see these things and they think, wow, this is really stupid. We shouldn't be doing this. But if I don't protect this program as it is now, it'll get taken away. These savings will be used to pay for something else. And we all experience that fear. You know, I think that, and I don't blame people because I've had it happen to me in this building on bills. I found a savings or a way to pay for some service that will help more people, and it gets moved from there to there for something completely different.
I know John wants to respond to that.
Madam Chair and Representative Boone, members of the committee, just very briefly, and also to Representative Huffman's comment about doing things that seem irrational. Basically, the federal government requires states to have a maintenance of effort. So once you start down the path of doing supplementation, you have to figure out a way of having supplement or some similar kind of assistance for people. And the similarity of what we'll be talking about in the work group is important. So I think that I just want to stress that this is not any fault of the state. They were required by the federal government to do this. And I think the idea of bringing all of this to light is very important, and hopefully we'll work for a better future for all of these people and get rid of something that would be, I think if the press was here reporting on it today and wondering why all of that money is spent on sending out very small checks, it would look rather silly, but the state is simply following what's required from the federal government.
Thank you, John, for clarifying this. Yeah. Representative Cullen.
I don't want to lose John's comments because I think that is important. It's too easy to look to, here's another silly thing that the state might be doing, and there really has been good justification behind meeting a requirement in order to do whatever it is that we have to do. And besides that, the bright spot, I think, in this is look how excited we get if we find that we've found $1 million somewhere that we can put into some more more beneficial programs. So, you know, it might be a good thing if there were a few more of these things buried somewhere that we could find at a time we need them desperately. Yeah.
And we hope that people will help us find those.
You know, Madam Chair, we're sitting back here and we're watching all the wheels turn right now up there. So.
Great. All right, so we will look forward to a work session on this and hopefully pass it. And thank you so much for bringing this to us. Good job. You know, I think sometimes it can get discouraging, especially with the financial situation as it is in our state. And when somebody can find this couple million dollars, yeah, that's wonderful.
Another fine employee at the Department of Human Services.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Give her a raise.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
I did want to draw a distinction in my comment. I was referring to the $1.70. The $25 a month can be substantial for an individual. And so I didn't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater.
I know you didn't. And I was thinking it costs not only the state to do that, but the bank, everybody's time.
Yeah.
Sure.
$1.70 check. I mean, it must cost at least $10 just to process that. Mm-hmm. Representative Maurer.
Yeah,
no. No. Good. Oh, gosh. He what? Can't stop.
I can't. No, this is.
It's bubbling out.
We have a rule that if the state has a rule of called prompt pay laws, requires an insurance company to reimburse a provider or pay them interest if they don't pay a claim within 30 days. And there, you know, a few times that didn't happen, and so we would get a check from an insurance company for the interest on a claim. Well, we'd get checks for 2 cents. 6 cents would just seem completely asinine, but the law required it.
Yeah.
So we don't do it to ourselves always. Sometimes we do it to other people.
Anything more on this bill? Thanks again, Representative Olson. And with that, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 3065, and we'll get this bill and hopefully have a work session on this.
Yes.
Okay.
Carry the work session over.
Carry the work session over to Friday. Right. Okay. Yes,
just one more thing we were talking about again. We talk a lot over here.
I know.
She's noticed that.
Well, I was wondering if the department could or has knowledge of how many people, I know they don't all, but some people might have a bank account, and some of these things could be done electronically at a savings.
Good point. Maybe that's something more we could look into. We had a big agenda today, and if we'd gotten our fiscals back, we would have been here at least an hour longer. So I'm hoping Friday we'll have some fiscals and we can pass some more bills. So thank you all.
I'd like to remind everybody that we are meeting with the Senate Judiciary Friday morning at 8 a.m. Mm-hmm. I think that's room 343. I'll double check that and make sure everyone has that in their mailbox. We'll meet there initially and then recess and come back here for our own business at 8:30.
It's the intercountry adoption law that we're going to be dealing with.
So people are going to have to be charged with getting from that meeting promptly back here.
Yes.
And not stopped along the way.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative. I love that. Thank you.
I think you need help playing mother.
I do. I'll close the House Committee on Human Services.